would like to thank all of you for your support and prayers over the last 6 weeks during my father's final journey through hospice, death, and now new life. I was sustained by those prayers in a myriad of ways, and I am truly grateful. When I returned to Waco last Saturday, I found a post-it note with a quote about Easter I had stuck on the wall above my kitchen table, for it was still the Easter season when my family began its vigil. The quote was by Pope John Paul II and read, "We are Easter people, and hallelujah is our song. We are Easter people, and hallelujah is our song." My family can say hallelujah for the life of my father, hallelujah for how his life touched so many people, hallelujah for the outpouring of love and care we have received from so many people, including those of you at St. Paul's. But it is no longer Easter season, is it? We are in the season after Pentecost, what the church calls ordinary time. In it, we hear of the extraordinary things that Jesus did and said, miracles, healings, words that transcended the breach between the law and how people actually lived and how God actually loves. In the past few weeks since Pentecost, we heard of a centurion, a Gentile, whose servant Jesus healed without even touching or even being in his presence. We heard of the widow's son raised from the dead. Last week, we heard how Jesus was able to forgive sins of even the most despicable of sinners. And today, well, it is a cosmic battle in our gospel, isn't it? With Jesus taking on the demons. Now, our modern sensibilities may be dismissive of the realities of demons. Some now think the demon-possessed healed by Jesus in the Gospels were epileptics or having some other sort of seizure disorder. Well, I have a great deal of respect for the cosmic powers of both good and of evil, so I have a tendency to read this passage as it is written. Our gospel reading today begins with Jesus and the disciples' arrival on the other side of the lake, the opposite side of the sea from their familiar countryside of Galilee. So there is already a sense of the unknown, an alien quality, a strangeness about this place. They don't land their boat in a city, but in a spot outside the protected city, which in the ancient world of the scriptures was a place of peril, of danger. And they are greeted by a wild man, unclothed and unclean to Jesus and the disciples, for he lived among the dead, among the tombs. And who is it that greets them? Is it the man, or is it the unclean spirits that inhabit the man? For Jesus is addressed respectfully, Son of the Most High God, but then immediately the demons seem to snivel about the possibility of Jesus tormenting them. These questions, this setting, puts the reader, us, on edge even more so as we find out that this man has been kept under guard and in shackles to protect him from himself. Or is it to protect others from him? This man who is more dead than alive, living closer to the dead, and reflecting the reality of our lives lived devoid of God. And Jesus entered this man's life and transformed it just as Jesus enters our own. The man has no name, perhaps to represent him as the quintessential everyman, the typical person, any one of us. For we are all at risk of having outside forces upend our lives, our identity, our very existence, aren't we? While the man has no name, the demons who inhabit him definitely do, or they claim to. Jesus asks the demons their name, and they respond not with their name, but with their number, legion, meaning 4,000 to 6,000, the number of soldiers in a Roman legion. Clearly, there's a bunch of them, those demons, causing chaos not only in this man's life, but in his locale. Our story grows more menacing at the thought of this large number of demons running amok. Or at the very least, it makes us more uncomfortable as the demons continue their dialogue with Jesus. They beg Jesus not to send them into the abyss, the place where they would be confined and not able to wreak the havoc the demons like to do, and as these have done within and through this unnamed man from the city. Jesus grants their request to enter a nearby herd of pigs, and the restless demons keep up their wild ways and end up driving the pigs over a cliff and into the lake. The man is restored to himself, to humanity, as he sits as one of Jesus' followers at his feet, fully clothed. Looking back at this passage, scholar François Bauvan sums it up as a double epiphany, a double realization. The passage speaks first of the power of God to save, to restore, transform, and triumph over evil. While the second realization from this passage is that evil exists, but will fall. It will fail when confronted with the love and power of God. Maybe all this talk about evil makes you uncomfortable. It is archaic language, is it not? Demon talk and evil sound superstitious, even a bit uneducated, at least to our enlightened minds. Meaning minds formed after the historical period called the Enlightenment, where all the mystery of the world was unmysticized by science. But I do believe that evil exists. We hear it politicized too much so that it loses its real meaning. We've heard of the evil empire, the axis of evil, with the result primarily being that of whipping up the crowd or making the crowd fearful to justify policy positions or governmental spending priorities. But we don't have to go very far back in history to see evil run amok. The 20th century was a century of genocide, beginning with 1915 in the Armenians in Turkey, all the way through Nanking, the Holocaust, the Khmer Rouge, the Hutus and Tutsis in Rwanda, and finally in Bosnia in the 1990s. Killing mass amounts of people is just pure evil. It denies that all humans, are created in the image of God. We in America have been able to isolate ourselves from most of this evil, creating an illusion of safety for most of the last century. But we're seeing this evil happening more and more on the American stage, not at the level of genocide, but through mass shootings, those in which 4 or more people are killed. For you see, mass shootings are happening once a month on our shore, at least they have since 2009. Last week's mass shooting in Orlando was more than just a mass shooting, wasn't it? Or the act of a lone wolf terrorist. It was a hate crime. In our country, the whole world, in fact, has responded with overwhelming love to this hate. Overwhelming love and sympathy. 49 innocent people who were out having a good time on a typical Saturday night cut down. Sounds so much like something that happened a year ago when 9 people attending a Bible study on a typical Wednesday night at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston were killed at the hands of a racist shooter. Or the 12 killed and 70 injured by the mentally ill man at a movie theater on what was a typical Friday night in Aurora, Colorado in July of 2012. Or even worse, young elementary school children in Newtown, Connecticut. Evil exists. Evil exists. Whether it's the work of a terrorist, a racist, or a mentally ill person, there are many who do not value human life which is created in the likeness of God. I think there are responses we could be taking, we should be taking. But since I always promise myself not to turn this pulpit into a political bully pulpit, I won't go into any of those political responses. But as Christians, we need to pay attention to our responses, our reactions to these experiences, these expressions of evil. For the byproduct of evil is fear. And if we think we can build walls high enough to feel safe, we deceive ourselves. If we think we can limit those who enter the United States so that we can feel safe, we delude ourselves. If we think we can arm ourselves to keep us safe, we are placing our faith and power other than God's. There are appropriate and God-centered responses we can take when confronted with evil. We can link arms with one another and experience the pain of our common humanity, as hundreds and thousands have done across the globe since the nightclub shooting last week in Orlando. We can share and express the love of God to all our neighbors, no matter their political positions, race, ethnicity, country of origin, religion, or sexual orientation, for perfect love casts out fear. But most of all, we can remember and put our faith in that double epiphany from our gospel today. God is sovereign and evil will fall. God is sovereign and evil will fall. And we have to remember, finally, we have to remember who we are, don't we? We are Easter people, are we not? And hallelujah is our song. Hallelujah that God triumphs over evil and death. Hallelujah that God brings life and love from evil and death, just as the empty tomb revealed 2,000 years ago and does for us today and in our own lives. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.